93.7 Express FM.
Hello and welcome to another coronavirus special podcast. In this week's show, we spoke to leader of Portsmouth City Council, Gerald Vernon Jackson. We also spoke to Amanda Whiteland-Smith, who is one of the community leaders at Citizens Advice Havant. We found out how to stay fit and healthy both mentally and physically from Associate Professor Adam Hawkey from Solon University and the British Association of Sport and Exercise Sciences. And then also Kirsty Meller on the show to chat about Portsmouth Coronavirus Support Group on Facebook that was set up just a couple of weeks ago. As always, if you have a question for us or anything that you want us to discuss on the coronavirus special, you can send me an email. It's robbie@expressfm.com with any queries or concerns or worries. Send me an email and we will do our best to answer them in the coming weeks. But we're kicking off talking to leader of Portsmouth City Council, Gerald Vernon Jackson. Gerald, thanks once again for your time.
No problem at all.
Right. I know that this is the last couple of weeks, this has been really helpful for people to sort of try and bring everyone up to date and give everyone an overview on where Portsmouth is and the state of COVID-19 in Pompey. Can you just try and sum things up for us where we are today?
Yes. So I think
it's a big question, I know.
It is. We have just over 70 people in the city who have COVID-19 or ill with it. That includes people in the hospital at QA, so it's probably not all of those people originally come from Portsmouth, I don't think, but that does include them. We do have people going down, but on the whole, I think people are being very sensible around the city. When I'm queuing at the pharmacy, everybody keeps 2 metres apart, everybody stands quietly in line, and it going well. But two bits I thought people would be interested in. The first is the decision we made to say that we're shutting the road at the seafront of the car parks. We did that last Sunday, and we're doing it for weekends going forward and bank holidays, just because we don't want to encourage people to come into Southsea to go to the seafront from outside the area. We need to avoid large groups of people getting together, and that seems one way in which we can say to people, okay, if you're walking here, jogging, cycling, great. But you shouldn't be travelling a long distance to come to go into the open air. You should have somewhere local to you. Mm-hmm. But the second thing we've done is we've now secured a hotel for people who are homeless, so that people can have their own space in the night shelter. It's much closer together, and so that will happen from tomorrow. We've already got another place that we've set up for people who are homeless who are down with the symptoms, and that's been in operation for a couple of weeks. But this means that everybody who is homeless should be able to have somewhere which is a room on their own so that they can do the self-isolation everybody else is doing.
Okay, I want to, if we go through both of those points then, start off with the road by the seafront, of course, being closed, and we understand why that's happened. I imagine there's been a lot of people still having to get through that area, though. Am I right in saying that? Because I'm trying to think of the area, and there are a lot of residents around there as well.
Yeah, and it's only the road by the seafront, and you can get to and fro all the way through Southsea fine without a problem. It's just trying to make the point to people that people shouldn't be driving down to the seafront from a long way away. We're told with government advice is to do take exercise, but to take it very close to where you live. And therefore, we just want to discourage people. We'll have the signs coming into the city, the electronic ones. Again, we'll be using those to tell people if you're coming into the city to go to the seafront, please don't.
And is it so it's not actually obviously the seafront itself that is still open. So because for a lot of people, this is going to be that'd be a huge escape to get to down
exactly.
to the seafront.
So it's fine for people to walk, cycle, jog. It's just trying to say to people from outside of the city, look, you shouldn't really be driving down here. There will be somewhere closer for you to be able to have your daily exercise.
Sure. Well, I know places like Porchester Castle and whatnot, they've been getting busy in the last week or so. And then if we come on to your second point you made about this hotel for the homeless shelter, what can you what more can you tell us about that? Whereabouts is it?
I'm not going to release the address.
Sure.
That's not fair. So we've got a whole range of different people have different issues when they're homeless. A lot of people use the night shelter, so we've got space for about 50 people in the city.
Yeah.
and this provides an alternative to them. We will continue to do health service support for people who are homeless. We've been feeding people at the day centre for the homeless all the way through this, and we'll continue to do so. We've also been trying to support people because some people who are homeless don't like going to the night shelter, and they prefer to be on their own. They prefer to be sleeping out, and so one of the things that happens with them is there are lots of voluntary groups who provide food for people who are homeless. Now, most of those groups with volunteers have stopped providing that because the volunteers have had to self-isolate and have found it difficult to be able to hand out food, being able to eat decent distance away. So again, we're picking that up and trying to make sure that there is food available for people who are on the streets.
And is that who's sort of running that? Is that part of the Hive setup?
It's all done through the Hive.
I see. So everyone that's there, all the volunteers that are helping out there, that's all through there. So there's no actual sort of hotel staff that are having to work with it.
I know there'll be hotel staff who'll be running the hotel, and then there'll be council officers who always work and work with the homeless, and we've got a charity who are contracted to be able to work with the homeless, the Society of St James, and they will continue to do the work that they would normally be doing, but there's also all the volunteers operating through the Hive who are doing the volunteer cooking of food, etc., for people who remain on the streets.
Sure.
But there is an offer for anybody who is homeless that we will get them somewhere they can live, isolated away, so they'll have a hotel room. But some people who are homeless will choose not to accept that.
I also want to bring us on to where we are in terms of this lockdown situation at the moment. Yeah. We've had a lot of messages in the last week of people saying, you know, I'm really, really sticking to these measures in lockdown and whatnot. And when I go out, I'm sticking to, you know, my 1 hour of exercise and I'm social distancing, or I'm trying to social distance. But a lot of people seemingly worried about others not social distancing or not necessarily playing by the rules at the moment. What's sort of generally is how's Portsmouth reacting to this?
Well, I think when I go out, which I try not to do, and I go out to very limited places, I think people are behaving really responsibly almost all of the time. As I said, I'm trying to go out just once or twice a week because my other half's one of the people who are at high risk, so I need to be careful.
Sure.
And that means that I'm just going out for food and prescriptions, and that's it. And I see people being really responsible, queuing down the street, keeping distance from each other. So that bit I see, I think people are doing really well. I have had some reports from people that's not so great. Last weekend, I had somebody who phoned me to say that someone's having a pool party two doors away from them. And so I told her to phone the police. And they came because people need to be responsible.
So is that...
And they need to make sure that they are, for everybody's good, that they're keeping a decent distance away.
And how should we be reacting? Or how should we be... You said, like, you told them to call the police. How do we try and... If we do see someone that isn't, you know, if you're walking, trying to walk past someone and, you know, they're not keeping the 2 metre distance or whatever, what advice would you give to residents at the moment that sort of feel threatened or feel worried, feel like they can't go outside?
So you can cross the other side of the road if you're worried.
Mm.
If there are people walking out, it may be that they are living in the same house and therefore it's fine for them to be close. We don't know. I think there will be, almost everybody will act responsibly. I think there will be some people who don't act responsibly. And sometimes they're the people who are most at risk. So I was at a surgery picking up a prescription and there were people waiting for their methadone prescriptions. So they get their daily dose of methadone. So these are people who are very strong drug users and who often have really chaotic lives. And when I saw them at the chemist, that came forward absolutely loud and clear that they were in chaotic lives. They weren't keeping separate. and yet their health will be incredibly badly compromised already, so their immune systems will be deeply damaged. And yet they were the ones who were not social distancing, and they were putting themselves at enormous risk.
Sure. Well, of course, it is ourselves, isn't it, that we put at risk if we don't follow
the... Well, it's not just ourselves. As some people were saying, if it's youngsters who are not doing it, we need to remind people that they put not just themselves at risk, but the people they're likely to put at risk are the people who live with them and their families. Mm. So their parents, grandparents, those are the people they will put at risk.
And I know, I heard that earlier this week. I heard of someone that was, you know, with a child, and, you know, they were heavily pregnant themselves as well. And, you know, I know it's been a worry for people for going outside. There's a couple of more things I just wanted to quickly touch on, because we're a bit pushed for time, if I may. There have been a couple of reports, I know, in the last week or two of scams that have been targeting the elderly and the vulnerable, and they've sort of claimed to be helping with shopping or collecting medication, and of course asking for people's money or credit card. Is there anything that the council has sort of have been able to put in place to prevent this happening, or sort of try and raise a bit more awareness to those people?
Just the advice that's been out, which is make sure that you ask for ID, make sure that you're only responding to stuff from government or from the council or from the Hive. There will be some unscrupulous people. I think the huge majority of people are being incredibly good. We are overwhelmed at the Hive with the number of volunteers. We've got 3,500 people in the city who volunteered to help. So the number of people doing good is enormous. The number of people trying to scam is small, but people should be careful. Don't give your bank details away. Make sure that if somebody is coming to do your shopping for you, that it's somebody who you've been called by the council or by the Hive, and make sure you get identification.
Sure. Just finally, I want to touch on carers, because another thing we got a lot of messages about are people worried about their loved ones that they're not able to see, wondering about the situation with carers, and are they still able to sort of offer their services? What's the situation there?
No. We desperately need carers, because if people are not being cared for in their own homes, then they'll have to go to hospital, and that'll take beds up that will be desperately needed if the numbers keep rising. So carers work incredibly hard, doing a very, very valuable job, often on minimum wage. And we all rely on them incredibly, so we have to make sure that we're supporting them. I'm very worried that some people who are carers have been given a hard time because they can't find anywhere to park, so they have to park on the yellow line and to go in and care for somebody, cook their meal for them or whatever, and people are giving them a hard time, which they absolutely shouldn't be. Unfortunately, some people don't wear uniforms, and so people don't know that they're out caring. So what we're trying to do is to provide some identification for people to make sure that they can identify. But if anybody has got a record of working in the past in the caring professions, I know the NHS has asked for people who are doctors and nurses to come back. The care services also desperately need people, because people who are carers will get ill, and that means that people who desperately need their help and support won't get the care they need unless we can recruit more people. So if you do have a background in the caring professions, please volunteer. Please come forward, because we really, really do need you as much as we need doctors and nurses.
Well, where would you advise them to go? Where do they go if they...
Everything should go to the Hive. All volunteer offers should come to the Hive across the whole city. If we have one system, that's great, because then everybody works together and we don't duplicate. If we have more than one system, things will become complicated.
Sure. Well, as always, Gerald, we really appreciate your time. We appreciate you keeping us up to speed with this situation.
Thought I was going to have a quiet time with this and I'd be able to sit at home. I have never, ever been as busy as this. I foolishly bought myself 15 books to read, and I think the chance of me getting through even one is zero.
this is where you earn your money. This is I imagine a situation. Well, it's a situation. I never thought I'd be doing talk radio, Gerald. So, so it's certainly new territory for us all. Listen, thanks again for your time and for keeping us. Go on.
And thank you. And please, everybody, keep safe. Make sure you support your friends, your family, and your neighbours. And between us all, we can get through this.
Absolutely. Try and have a read of those books if you can at some point, Gerald. Listen, thank you for your time
Thanks. This
evening. Take care of yourself.
Cheers. Bye.
Councillor Gerald Vernon-Jackson, leader of Portsmouth City Council, on the coronavirus show. Very shortly, we'll be speaking to Associate Professor Adam Hawkey from Solent University and British Association for Sport and Exercise Sciences. We'll be talking to him about trying to stay fit and healthy, both mentally and physically, whilst we're in lockdown at the moment. And of course, it's a worrying time for us in terms of our health, but also in terms of our sort of financial security and the way in which the way in which our careers are going to go forward and our jobs are going to go forward and our lives are going to go forward in this worrying time. And a place that you can often go in these times is Citizens Advice, and that's why we've got on the line Amanda Whiteland-Smith, who is one of the community leaders at Citizens Advice. Amanda, good evening to you. Hi.
Hello.
Thank you very much for your time this evening. Thanks for coming on the show. Talk to us then about Citizens Advice and specifically sort of the work that you guys are doing in the local area, because a lot of people, I imagine, are after you at the moment and literally after your advice.
Yeah, absolutely. The National Citizens Advice website has been incredibly busy. I think they recorded 2.2 million views on their national website last week. So, very busy organisation, and I think because we're local charities, there was a perception that we might be closed because we have all had to close down our face-to-face drop-in centres. But we're all very much here and wanting to take calls on telephone calls, email advice, and wanting to still deliver a service.
Sure, and I imagine, like you said, it is this is an unprecedented time and a time where you guys must be in great demand. But talk to us just for the people that maybe have sort of we've all heard of Citizens Advice and whatnot, and quite often in the last week I've heard it get sort of thrown around, people just saying, oh, just contact Citizens Advice and whatnot. But what actually, just sort of explain to us the work that you do and the services that you offer.
Okay, so in normal times, Citizens Advice is an holistic advice service. So we cover virtually anything. So we're the first port of call. If something comes up and you don't know how to deal with it, if you come to Citizens Advice, we might have very specific information, but if not, we will know where to send you to get the help you need. At the moment, the main problem relates to something called coronavirus. So it is going to be employment rights. Employment rights are probably the most common one at the moment, access to benefits. Earlier on, it was about cancellation of holidays and flights and events coming up. But we'll aim to deal with anything that comes our way.
And what, in terms of what are people generally trying to get in touch with? Is it mainly things like, I suppose, from a financial point of view? I know that's something that's been of great worry and concern to people in the last sort of days and weeks.
Absolutely. I think the two main areas we're seeing are around fears of debt and not being able to pay your bills, and then employment issues. So there's been a lot of inquiries around, should I be furloughed? Can my employer tell me to stop working? Can my employer make me go and do something else? We've had cases of employees being asked to go and volunteer in London without feeling as though they're being given any choice. We've had a real range of things come through around the whole employment spectrum.
And I suppose that the worry here is because, you know, from a financial point of view, if we just stick on that for now, that a lot of people, you know, everyone's different, first of all, and everyone has different circumstances and falls into a different category, and they're all individuals. And a lot of people are finding ways, that the support isn't helping them. For example, from the government support, they might have found a way that they're slipping through the net and they don't feel like they're supported and stuff. How easy is it to actually sort of help people and provide them with some sort of support if they are one of those cases that sort of you just think, well, hang on, they do just fall through the net type thing?
Okay, so if people do just fall through the net, then it's really taking them back to the basics. And what we need to do is make sure people have got what they need to cover their ongoing living expenses. So it's, that would be going back to the means-tested benefits like universal credit, Citizens Advice run a helped claim line. That's a national free phone line that can help people access benefits. And locally, we've got some key workers who can help people, talk them through the online claims, because there's been a real bottleneck on telephone claims to the Department of Works and Pension. So they can take that sort of practical steps at the very bottom line to make sure people have got enough access to money for food for their immediate needs.
Sure.
We can look at what they might need going forward. At the moment, it's difficult to predict what people are going to need in the bigger picture of debts, but most of the court action and has all been halted. So mortgage lenders are not supposed to seek repossession.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guidance, and we've got all that information, which can be quite reassuring for people to know that there is something in place that's going to take the immediate pressure off.
Yeah, and I know that in the South, that especially there's a high number of self-employed people and you know, small businesses and a lot of people will be fearing for their business and will be fearing for their sort of careers if they're self-employed. And I know that they're going to be targeting things like universal credit, like you said, if they, you know, maybe if they're part of a limited company, if they're owner of a limited company or have become self-employed in the last year. But obviously, getting through to places like universal credit and whatnot at the moment, I know that the phone lines and stuff have been jammed for that. Is there any sort of reassurance that we can give to people that this will calm down or that they will be heard?
I think things will be heard. One of the things that we become quite aware of is ways that are better to get things processed. So, for example, Universal Credit, we know that online claims are going through.
Mm.
So we can help people who've perhaps not got the confidence to make the online claim themselves by talking them through that process over the phone. So there is help. I mean, at the moment, it's happening to everybody, isn't it? So there is a massive amount of demand, which is why we wanted to get our services up and running as soon as possible. So we've got our volunteers working from home, taking calls. I know Advice Portsmouth have kept their line going and are able to help people. So, you know, go to the advice agencies. If people can't find what they need, go to the advice agencies. We found a number of inquiries from people where it seems as though the small employers in particular don't really know what they have to do. So the protection hasn't gone in because the employer doesn't know where to turn for advice.
Sure.
So it is that, you know, come to advice agencies. There is a lot of information out there about what people need to do.
And what,
getting that information out to people.
And what advice would you give to those that are going to, because like you said, you're in such high demand. I know that there's going to be times where phone lines will be sort of jammed up for your service. And I imagine emails as well are flooding in, the inboxes are becoming full. What advice would you give to people that maybe aren't able to get through to you at the moment?
I mean, I would say use things like the website. So I'm from Citizens Advice Havant, and we've had very, very few inquiries through are from our website. So we're saying to people, even if you find a web form difficult, use the contact us and we'll call you back, because we've got more capacity. We've got advisors working on the advice line, which is a Hampshire-wide service.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you know, we'd like to see that local people are being able to access help. And I think that access via email or via websites, or I know for Advice Portsmouth, they have a Facebook page. Actually, make that contact and somebody will call you back.
Okay, I think that'll provide a lot of reassurance to people, because I know that, you know, so many people have just been, we've seen so many texts and tweets and whatnot, people just saying, I just can't get through. You know, people are saying, this is where I can get help, but I just can't get through. So I think that'll certainly help people. Listen, Amanda, thank you for all the work that you're doing and all the work that Citizens Advice are doing. And thanks for your time this evening as well. We appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Amanda Whiteland-Smith, the community leader at Citizens Advice. Don't forget, if you want to find out more about how you can get sort of information and how you can get help from them, you can call them. The Hampshire Advice Line number is 03444 111306. So that is 03444 111306. You can alternatively visit them online, citizensadvicehaven.org, and find out more information about them there. That is one brilliant way of helping people. Another one is a Facebook group that has been set up by Kirsty Meller and a few of her colleagues as well. It's the Portsmouth Coronavirus Support Group, which has been set up on Facebook. We're going to speak to her a little bit later on, and also coming next, we'll find out about how you can stay fit and healthy throughout this lockdown. We'll be talking to Associate Professor Adam Hawkey from Solent University in just a couple of minutes' time.
This and every Saturday morning, join me, Ian, for the Express FM Saturday Breakfast Show. We'll have news, weather, travel and sport to start your weekend. We'll moan on the Saturday Moan.
I saw cream eggs in a shop this week. They were either really, really early or maybe quite out of date. Next, I want to moan about people who say never, they've just said it twice.
We've got 80s Delayed and a comprehensive guide to what's on in Portsmouth. So join me this Saturday morning for breakfast from 7 till 10 on Express FM.
The coronavirus special until 7 o'clock this evening, just to bring you up to speed with where we are sitting from a sort of statistical point of view in Portsmouth. We learned this week that 46 COVID-19 patients with underlying health conditions have died so far at QA Hospital. 78 people have been diagnosed with COVID-19 in Pompey as well. That's as of 9 a.m. on Tuesday as we know it. And also, of course, QA Hospital staff leave has been cancelled because of the expected rise in cases that are, well, of course, they're forecast to go up in the coming days and weeks as well. We've got 29,476 cases of COVID-19 in the UK itself, over 2,000 deaths, one of which included a 13-year-old boy who died in London after catching coronavirus without any underlying health conditions, the youngest person in the UK to have died because of the virus. We've also seen, of course, plenty of local events being cancelled. On Wednesday, it was announced that the Wickham Horse Fair had been cancelled for 2020. Plenty of sporting events cancelled as well. And there's plenty of, plenty of opportunities being scrapped, unfortunately, to go and see any sport and to get ourselves outside. But we need to try and find ways to stay healthy, both fit physically and mentally. And to talk about that, we've now got the Associate Professor and Head of Sports Science and Performance at Solent University in Southampton, and also, quite a resume this, the Deputy Chair of the British Association of Sport and Exercise Sciences, which is the UK professional body for sport and exercise science, Adam Hawkey on the phone. Adam, good evening to you. Thanks for your time.
Hello.
Thanks for your time this evening, Adam. Talk to us if you can. First of all, can we just sort of just set the scene for us from a sort of sports sciencey point of view, but from a sort of a sciencey point of view, the current situation where we're all at as human beings in this mad sort of lockdown that we're in.
Yeah, I guess the biggest factor at the moment is in this lockdown situation is that we're all feeling a bit confined, both physically and mentally, I guess. And we're finding that we can't go out and do the normal things that we would normally do. I know I regularly leave too late to get the train and run, and therefore that forms a good bit of physical activity for me every day. So people are missing that kind of regularity of their normal kind of daily routine. And for some of us, for a lot of us, that involves some kind of physical activity. So from a physical perspective, people are feeling very confined and maybe a little bit unsure about what they can do to maintain their physical activity. And also from a mental health perspective, we're feeling the same kind of issues in terms of we're not having that physical interaction with people, although we can Skype and we can talk to people on other modes. That kind of isolation, I think, is quite a big factor at the moment.
Yeah, I want to come on to sort of, come on to the mental side of things, and we'll start with the physical side of things in a bit more detail. I heard, what's the sort of, why do we feel constrained in a physical sense? Because I heard people talking the other day, and they were talking about sort of the fact that obviously a lot of people, they self-isolate already. A lot of people love spending time on the sofa and at home, but this time we can't get our head around it as much.
Yeah, I think part of that, and I know we're talking about the physical side of things here, but I think part of it is a psychological thing in the sense that we're not allowed to go and do the things that we maybe could do. Whether or not we do them anyway is another issue. But I think being told that we can't go to the gym, we can't go, you know, down and do some cycling in our normal place, I think those restrictions are what are causing people some issues. I mean, obviously, we can potentially keep as active as we ever have been. You know, physical activity now is probably coming up people's agenda more than it was previously because people are realising that they're stuck at home and they need to keep active. And it's not just to keep fit and healthy. There are other factors that, you know, are really good for us when we're in this kind of lockdown scenario.
And what are those sort of factors? Because, again, I heard someone said to me the other day, they said, you know, boredom is actually a really good thing to feel. Is that what you're referring to?
Well, I think what that boredom might do is actually kind of generate some interest in people to, you know, I'm really bored, what can I do? Oh, I'll do some physical activity. Mm. And we know that being sedentary or not doing any physical activity is really bad for us. And we know that being physically active, be that just general things like gardening, going for walks, right up to the point of, you know, training 3 or 4 times a day if you're an athlete, really helps in terms of things like lowering our blood pressure, lowering cholesterol. These things can have a real beneficial impact on reducing heart disease, stroke and diabetes and those kind of diseases we hear banded about all the time that we know physical activity is good for. It's also really good to maintaining our kind of muscle mass. So that helps us to reduce things like sarcopenia, which is a clinical case of muscle loss. And also, we've probably all heard about osteoporosis, which is a loss of bone density. So all this kind of physical activity helps with that. But we've also got, on top of those things, you know, if we're all sitting down all the time, we're going to get achy legs. We're going to feel really crushed in. So just getting out and doing some movement will really help you in terms of your posture, making you feel better about yourselves. But also, things like exercise and physical activity reduce a hormone called cortisol, which is a stress hormone, and at the same time releases things like endorphins, which are good feel-good hormones. So not only will we get some of these physical benefits that I've previously mentioned in terms of our health and well-being, but we also will feel psychologically better because we're reducing these stress hormones and increasing our feel-good factors.
Sure. So let's talk about this actually, the actual doing it side of things, and the actual sort of putting your mind or physically putting yourself into a situation of being more active. What is sort of a good starting point? Because a lot of people I know, you know, they'll have office jobs, so they're used to being sort of sitting down all day. But then I suppose in the evening at the moment, people are worried sort of, am I going out for too long if I'm going for a run or something like that? Where's the sort of balance come in there? Where do people start? What's the starting point?
The guidelines across the world, really. So NHS guidelines, American College of Sports Medicine guidelines, World Health Organization guidelines for physical activity are 150 hours a week of low to moderate physical activity. So things like going for a walk, maybe a light jog, some cycling, even things like gardening and cleaning the house. So if you're looking at, you know, if you take the weekend out of it, just as an example, that's around about 30 minutes a day. And that's what the government are asking us to do, is to go out and do one bout of exercise or physical activity a day. So there's nothing really changed, and we can stick to those now. And actually, I'm partly hopeful that now people maybe potentially have more time in their day to do things, that they can set aside that half an hour a day to go and do that physical activity.
Well, go on.
But are you coming?
Well, I was just going to say, it's definitely going to go one way or another, isn't it? Because there's been the argument of people saying, oh, well, everyone's going to be indoors, this is going to be awful for everyone's physical and mental health. And then there's the other side, like you said, people suddenly then take up running and they're sold on it.
Yeah, I mean, anecdotally, and obviously that's not scientific, and I have to be careful as a scientist to use too much anecdotal evidence. But, you know, when I've been going out for my daily walk for half an hour, I've noticed far more runners around. Now, that may just be coincidental because I'm out and I'm noticing people out more and people aren't in their cars. But hopefully people are taking up a bit more physical activity. And as long as they're sticking to the government guidelines of social distancing, et cetera, then that's fantastic. And that could be beneficial. Now, obviously, some of us, myself included, are still working. So we're remote working or working from home. And what I'd say to people, if they're finding themselves sitting down a lot, is just being able to give yourself 15 minutes every hour where you're not sitting down. You know, stand up, have a walk around the house, maybe do a few lunges or a few squats or something just to keep yourself physically and mentally alert, that can be really beneficial as well. And one thing that I've spoken about in some of the articles that I've been asked to write recently around this topic have been around kind of strength exercises as well. So it's not just doing cardiovascular exercise where we're working the heart and those kind of physical activity gains. Mm-hmm. It's also things like strength exercises. So, you know, doing things, if you've got, you know, obviously I'm quite lucky that I'm involved in sports science. I've got a set of weights at home, so I can do that a couple of times a week. Those things help generate muscle mass and bone mass as well. But if you haven't got those, you know, grab some tins from your cupboard. If you've got some tins and you've managed to get some things from the supermarket, a bag of flour, a bag of sugar, some, you know, a bottle of water or something, and do some kind of weight training exercises. One of the things I mentioned, which has gathered a little bit of steam, is, you know, if you've got young kids at home, what a fantastic way to get them geared up to being involved in physical activity and get them excited about being active. And use them for some of your weight training, very, very carefully, obviously.
Yeah, I've seen a few videos on Instagram.
Yeah, it's a great way. And not only do you benefit your own physical activity, it gets them interested in that from an early age, and will have a massive benefit on their physical and mental well-being.
And you touch on mental well-being there as well. And of course, as we sort of know that there is this crossover between physical and mental health, and you know, them helping each other in certain aspects. And one thing I want to touch on is a lot of these things we've seen, sort of, for example, Joe Wicks and whatnot, his workouts in the morning. A lot of these things are targeted at people, I'd probably say, you know, the younger generation. And I suppose it's quite worrying thinking about the older generation at the moment, who maybe they only live in smaller houses and they don't have gardens, things like that. How can sort of the older generation that would normally be able to walk to the shop and buy a newspaper, now not able to do that, how do they try and sort of get a bit more active?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing would hopefully that they can still go and have a quick walk, because obviously we're allowed to do that as long as we're employing these social distancing. But even if they're still able to do that, then doing some activity at home, and even things like doing some repeated sit-up and standing from a chair that you're in. You know, if you're confined to a chair most of the day, just spending 5 minutes a day or however long you can stand or endure is, you know, do some basic standing up exercises. You know, if you've got those tins that you're about to put on for your dinner, do some little bicep curls and lift those up. And you're absolutely right. It's great that we're getting the kids active. And let's be honest, they're the ones that we need to engage the most, because they're probably the ones that are having the biggest shift in terms of their patterns. They're not going to school anymore. And getting them into a routine is really, really good, especially for the parents. They need to keep them active and engaged. But you're right, this older generation will still benefit. We still get benefits from exercising no matter what age we are. So finding some things around the house that maybe you can do, like I said, if you've got a garden, gardening is a great way of providing both that physical activity, but also some kind of resistance work if you're digging up against the ground. If you're unlucky not to have a garden, then doing things around the house. I mentioned before about tins and any flower you've got. Try and be a little bit creative and do things that you feel are providing you with some kind of resistance training.
We had a message from a listener a few days ago saying that they'd had trouble sleeping, and they thought that it was partly due to the fact that, you know, they weren't able to get outdoors as much, but also down to their diet, and they weren't too sure what things that they should be sort of eating at the moment. And of course, we don't have takeaways to sort of go and get and sort of binge at the moment. What kind of effect does diet have as well, and how important is that to sort of staying active?
Yeah, I think both those things are really key points you raised there, both diet and sleep. We know that it's a funny thing, exercise, because exercise actually can give us a lot of energy. If we're not doing any exercise, we become lethargic. We all know that feeling. Mm. You know, I haven't done any exercise for a few days. I feel a little bit low. And that's related a little bit to those endorphins. So doing a little bit of exercise gives us that little bit of lift. So that can actually really help. The issue that you've got, if you're not doing any exercise and you're feeling lethargic all day, and you're not expending as many energy, many calories in the day, when you come to go into sleep, then you're not as exhausted as you maybe normally would do in a normal day, and therefore people may have trouble sleeping. The diet thing's a really interesting one, because although we're probably all feeling a little bit worried about not being able to get the food that we might normally eat, there does seem to be an increase in people eating things that aren't particularly good for them. And people buying fast food and people buying things that they can eat quickly rather than fresh fruit and vegetables.
Did you say an increase in that? Did you say?
Yeah, so there may be an issue in the fact that they can't get hold of some of those fresh fruit and vegetables. So mm-hmm. we're buying a lot more packaged goods, things that we may not normally buy. And I think because we're at home more, potentially we're starting to eat more. So even though we're a bit worried about running out of food, we're still eating more. Maybe partly because we're maybe feeling a little bit bored, maybe because we haven't got the same sort of routine. So it's really important, if you can, to have a balanced diet as we normally would. So, you know, have a good mix of carbohydrates, so things like bread and potatoes, a good mix of protein, so things that we might get from corn or other plant substitutes or meat and fish, and you know, reduce in some ways the amount of fat that we're having, although fat is also very important for our diet. I think it's interesting. I was speaking to someone at work the other day, and they were talking about, can you please somewhere get in there about the benefits of eating chocolate, because I want to not feel guilty about eating so much chocolate. And it's interesting because I said to her, there are some real benefits of eating chocolate. You know, we get this release of endorphins from eating chocolate. It makes us feel good. There are some benefits in terms of calcium. But obviously, we don't want to be going eating loads and loads of chocolate, primarily because of the sugar and the calorific intake that we get from that. But I think really it's just that, you know, we're not inventing a new wheel here. You know, it is the general advice of be active, eat healthily and eat a balanced diet, and do some things that keep us engaged and that we enjoy doing. There's nothing wrong catching up on your box set of Game of Thrones or whatever it might be. But if my advice would be, if you're spending an hour watching the TV or sitting down in front of your computer, make sure you spend 10, 15 minutes of each hour doing something to keep yourself moving around or active, and then stick to those guidelines of 30 minutes a day of doing some sort of physical activity, and a couple of times a week doing some things that are testing your muscles a little bit more.
Well, listen, Adam, I know that will have helped a lot of people. It certainly helped me as well. So thank you so much for your time this evening, and hopefully we can speak again soon.
Perfect. That's great. Lovely speaking to you.
Associate Professor Adam Hawkey from Solon University and the British Association for Sport and Exercise Sciences. A big thank you for him for his time this evening. Right now, 6:48. Coming next, we're going to be talking about a Facebook support group.
Express FM. Passionately Portsmouth.
Welcome back to our coronavirus special with you until 7 o'clock this evening. We've now got Kirsty Meller on the line, who set up the Portsmouth Coronavirus Support Group. Kirsty, good evening to you.
Yes, so the group was set up to provide a network of informal sort of support by volunteers, and that support would be helping those that are self-isolating because of COVID-19 or because they're in an at-risk group. So the group was set up I think it's about 3 weeks ago, and we've got over 8,000 members. With over 200 members signing up to volunteer via the Hive. It's mainly a safe space for people to kind of like share requests for support and supplies, and then for us sort of coordinating dropping those items off. But it's also a place for emotional support as well, because there's quite a lot of anxiety and worry and a lot of misinformation floating around about COVID-19.
Sure. Well, especially in in a local sense as well. It's very similar in where I live, that there's a lot of sort of rumours that go around and things like that, and a lot of people sort of not really understanding the exact situation because you sort of assume when you see these press conferences or whatever, and coming from London, and you see these things, World Health Organization, you think, oh, well, my area must be sort of immune to this. And I guess this is trying to make people understand the exact situation and where we do stand with COVID-19.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we want to put people's minds at rest. And we've been, obviously things have been moving very, very quickly, and things change, from one day to the next.
Sure.
So we want to make sure that people are getting the right information. And one of our members of the working team, her name's Jax, she put together a website, and we kind of picked and chose appropriate links to credible sources of advice that people can then visit the website in almost like a one-stop shop to, you know, get credible sources of information so that they are well informed.
Yeah, and you're working with Hive as well on this, is that right?
Yes, that's right. So yeah, pretty much from day dot, we wanted to work with Hive and then with us. And obviously the Hive a representative group of like the voluntary sector, the National Health Service,
sure, and
the Portsmouth Clinical Commissioning Group. It's a lovely union of organisations under one umbrella. And we wanted to ensure that we have an effective and efficient response to the situation and, you know, keeping residents safe. The Hive have been working under tremendous pressure with Portsmouth City Council and the other organisations that they work with, and they've just brought in the Victorious team, and they're now on board, and we're hoping to work with them to coordinate the volunteers. The many volunteers that have gone forward. So I think in total it's about 387 individuals and 60 other organisations that have signed up to the Hive. And the Hive currently have been dedicated to supporting the most vulnerable residents kind of via a triage system. And that's mainly for those who have no support in place and have been advised to self-isolate.
And go on. Sorry.
That's okay. There is potentially a large gap of people that are falling through the cracks in services. And it's clear that there's lots of people willing to help and lots of people in need. And we need to effectively, you know, match these two groups up and ensure that people that are not at risk to be, you know, so they don't become more vulnerable.
So
that's, you know, a good way of that we can work with the Hive as well.
And I suppose so. That's where they come in from a sort of, I suppose this is where they come in on a more practical level. So essentially, it's quite a simple mechanism, I suppose. So if people need anything, then they just post it on that group, and then you know, someone will hopefully pick it up. Someone that will be able to help out.
Yeah, that's right. So I mean, we've had like requests for bags of pasta, and they've been sourced and found and dropped around to the person that's asked for them. It can vary really what people are in need with at the time. It's been really helpful in that sense. And it's just, I think what's been really lovely is the kindness and positivity shared on the group. It's been quite incredible and so encouraging and inspiring to see so many people coming together in a collective effort to, you know, achieve a common goal, and that's to help.
Sure, this is what people need at this time. You know, is that sort of community coming back into force that we maybe haven't really seen in the last however many years, 20, 30 years. We sort of, with technology, we've seen community go out the window a little bit.
Yeah.
And I suppose now it's nice that people, you can stay connected. And I suppose, you know, you say that they also offer sort of emotional support. It's just nice to know that other people are feeling the same way. And I guess that's where people can sort of vent if they want to. In that sort of respect.
Yeah, I mean, lots of people have kind of said, you know, out of a really rubbish situation, it has brought communities together.
Mm.
And I mean, you know, first and foremost, we want the group to support people, you know, online. But, you know, we've also taken a bit of a light-hearted approach as well. So we've introduced a game at 7 p.m. Every evening that lasts for about an hour and a half. And the participation from members of the group has been really good. And actually, we've had people messages that have said, you know, this has really been uplifting. So, you know, it's important to keep people's spirits up as well.
Yeah.
And again, it's a form of contact for people. So, you know, when you're isolating at home, you might not have anyone else to talk to, and it's a way that people can reach out.
So if people are listening right now and they sort of think this is something that's going to benefit them, and I'm sure, you know, if it's not going to benefit you, it's going to benefit someone that you know, living in the local area or whatever. So it's an open group, am I right in saying that? You just basically just search for Portsmouth Coronavirus Support Group, and then you can join it from there?
Yep, that's correct. Yeah, so if you just go onto Facebook and search Portsmouth Coronavirus Support Group, And then you can request to join, but there's a set of rules, you know, that people have to adhere to. It's a friendly, open space. So, yeah, I mean, I think our hope is to bring members together, providing support and encouragement and sharing that out to the community. So, it, you know, it's a tough time for all of us. Come and join the group. There's plenty of support on there. There's obviously the website that Jack has created within 1 week as well. So that's amazing. And there's where we get a lot of traffic of posts coming through. So do make use of the website as well, because, like I said earlier, it's all the information is in a one-stop shop.
So what is that? What is that website, just quickly?
PortsmouthCoronavirusSupport.org.uk.
Okay, brilliant. Listen, I think that's going to... I know that... I've read through it the last few days and whatnot. Just scroll through that support group, and it is helping and it is genuinely reassuring. So I know a lot of people are benefiting from it. So, Kirsty, thank you for all the work you've done in setting it up and supporting people. And thanks for your time this evening as well.
No problem. Thank you. And, you know, obviously, can I just give a little shout out to... There's a whole working team behind this group of 20 people that admin and moderate it day and night. So, you know, Charlotte Gerarda initially set the group up, and myself, Reb and Paula came on board to help Charlotte with the admin side of things. And we sort of built the team around it. So, yeah. It's really effective, and we're really glad that it's helping people. So, and ultimately, that's what we want. So,
well, you're certainly doing that. You're all legends, and we send you all of our love and take care. And we'll speak soon.
And you too. Take care. Bye bye.
Kirsty Miller from Portsmouth Coronavirus Support Group. Of course, if you want to find out more information about that, you can do portsmouthcoronavirussupport.org.uk, or you can search for them on Facebook. Just search for Portsmouth Coronavirus Support Group. A big thank you to Kirsty Miller for coming on the show. Also, a big thank you to the rest of my guests, Associate Professor Adam Hawkey from Solent University and the British Association for Sport and Exercise Sciences, Amanda Whiteland-Smith from Citizens Advice Haven't, one of the community leaders there, and of course also a big thank you to the leader of Portsmouth City Council, Gerald Vernon Jackson. A big thank you to you for listening to this as well. Don't forget, if you have a question or a query that you want answering, just send it to me in an email, robbie@expressfm.com, and the Coronavirus Special Show returns again on Wednesday from 6 o'clock.